Jesus said, anyone that wishes to come after me, that's in Mark 8, you have to deny yourself, take up your cross. In other words, what it is, it's a walk of death. And a walk of death, you suffer in it. But that's where the glory is.
For longer than I care to admit, I accepted without examination what I was taught as a child, that we exist to serve a grumpy, grudge-holding God. First, under the pall of original sin, and thereafter in conflict with temptation. If I imagined any mechanism for this, I suppose it was a vast warehouse of switched-off spirits, all tainted by Adam's transgression, all awaiting delivery, activation, and rigorous testing to determine their suitability for readmission to paradise. This reconditioning scenario assumes that the body and the spirit are in opposition, the spirit striving for heaven, the body raging against what Dylan Thomas called the dying of the light. If our bodies were in league with our spirits, wouldn't they welcome death as a natural, desirable conclusion? We'd shed our bodies as casually as a snake sheds its skin. No pain or despair, no anger, jealousy, or rage. None of the body's panoply of responses to deprivation.
Verse 1, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and what kind of sacrifice? Do you know that a holy sacrifice was one that abstained from lust of the flesh? Did you see that a while ago? Did we read that in 1 Peter? Shake your head. It's not very holy when it's acting like Satan, is it? Is your body holy when it's...
Orthodox holy men like Milton Green play up this conflict to great effect. Self-denial, they say, is purifying. Poverty, celibacy, removal of the offending hand. Christ pierced and scourged and bleeding on the cross. Wars and rumors of war between the two planes of existence. And extreme suffering does induce what many describe as religious ecstasy, doesn't it? It loosens the body's grip on our senses just long enough for us to glimpse the great beyond, our reward, as we call it, our eternal reward. Ironically, I've found that the best way for me to distance myself from my body is to give it exactly what it wants, be that food, rest, sex, or anything else it sets its sights on. This is how I get my body to shut up and leave me alone. Was it Reverend Ike who preached against pie in the sky by and by? Carlton Pearson preaches that we make our own hell right here on earth, that all of us are glory-bound despite ourselves.
We are seen in 1 Peter as obedient children, not be conformed to the flesh, right? Now we're seeing, do not be conformed to the world, but be what? You're going to be transformed into the divine nature by the renewing of your mind. How do you renew your mind? Now the Lord, you start taking...
Disclaimer here, I've never had an out-of-body or near-death experience. Never entered a trance state. Never even been hypnotized. I have no first-hand evidence whatsoever that it's possible to peek beyond the veil of this existence. But I have a tremendously powerful intuition that there is a veil, and that there is an infinite, and that we are connected in some positive, affirming way to that infinite and to each other. And I have no idea what I'm talking about. Which is sort of the point. The brain's ability to detect, let alone comprehend, matters of the spirit is as doubtful, in my opinion, as the eye's ability to see flavor. We can predict flavor based on appearances, but we can't know it until our mouths get involved. What our spiritual mouths might be, by the way, I haven't a clue. Maybe, as Reverend Ike teaches, the spirit likes the body, in the same way that people like houses, and, for that matter, the snake likes its skin. Maybe the spirit wants its body to be happy and healthy and long-living, and, by extension, might want the whole planet to be happy and healthy and long-living, because this is where the spirit has chosen to be for a while. Maybe being here isn't a trial or a punishment, but a choice, made for reasons we won't fathom until the deed we're here to do is done.
And He's come with all his heart, and he don't know many scripture or anything, but he knows all his heart. Turn to the Lord. You watch him go out and talk about Jesus, but he can just say something. The Spirit of God just go all over somebody. See, it's not us and our intellect and it's doing it. It's the Spirit of God that works with us. That's what I tell you. The fruit of righteousness that's walking right in God's eyes, we become a tree of life. You don't have to wait till Thursday night visitation. I'm telling you to slosh all over everybody while you're getting there.
Of course, the body mourns its own passing, just as the snake's skin might mourn the end of its usefulness. But these transitions aren't tragedies. We shuttle from one realm to another. How many houses does the average person occupy in a lifetime? How many times does a snake shed its skin? And what does it matter? Houses come and go. The snake moves on. We move on. All glory is fleeting. Maybe the spirit is honing itself on the body somehow, and suffering, as we define it, is the abrasive. Maybe our sojourn here is a process of spiritual exfoliation. Maybe we are to our spirits what loofah sponges are to us, and we emerge from our bodies cleaner and smoother for the brief association.
I think, and we've been reading about the will of God being opposite to the flesh over and over and over and over, and you're going to keep seeing over and over.
At the same time, however, we're still us inside these bodies. We are here, for now. If being here were a loss or a danger, surely we'd have adjusted course by now. The alternative is neck deep in original sin, venial sin, mortal sin, temptation, penance, purgatory, damnation, the big, angry, whack-a-mole God of the Old Testament, all of which I reject reflexively. I reject also my poor brain's determination to master this topic. Thinking is, I believe, a bodily function. Even what we describe as sixth sense is, I believe, only the liminal edge of the prosaic, a tiny sliver of the spiritual spectrum. While we may be able, with great effort, to detect spiritual matters for long enough to point ourselves toward them and bask in them ever so briefly, I believe we're better off disengaging our brains as we approach the target that we'll acquire only in death. The mind, duty-bound as the body's proxy, wants to comprehend, consume, and manipulate everything it touches. This, I think, is why we are so driven to understand everything. But we can't. None of us. The best that we can do inside these bodies is be good bodies. And when we detect the glimmer of something spiritual, move toward it. And if we see somebody else doing this, we should tiptoe out of the room and close the door behind us as quietly as possible.
Indulging the desires of the flesh. You formerly was indulging the desires. Are you circling these? We don't have to get out that wet squirrel. You formerly indulged the lust of the flesh, the desires of the flesh. Folks, is this plain? Whatever come in your mind, or whatever desire to come in your mind right there, turn right. Yes, sir, Mr. Satan. Turn left. Yes, sir, Mr. Satan. Fort to duty, Mr. Satan. Now where we go to? Let's go over a little greed. Let's go to the shopping center of lust a little bit. Folks, who you think that talks to you, and you go in those grocery stores, get over around that thing.
If this were a sermon, I'd refer now to the Bible passage that settles the issue once and for all. And the one that comes immediately to mind is Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. Good advice, I think. Being still. Stop striving and acquiring and know that I am God. Stop worrying about what it all means, how it began, where it's going. Stop digging. Stop deducing. Just stop. And know that I am God. And God is love, right? According to the newer of the two testaments anyway, God is love, and we are love, and our very existence here inside these loathsome, brilliant bodies of ours is an expression of love. Might the temporal realm and the spirit realm be two views of the same thing? They might, I suppose. But who am I to say? Who am I in any respect? Maybe my uncertainty about the answer to this most fundamental question is itself the answer I'm looking for. And maybe this is where I should put down my pick and shovel, look up at the mountain I'm trying to excavate, and be still.
I can only share with you what I know. I don't have to know everything. But let me tell you something. Nobody else knows everything either. I'm just a part. You're a part. I'm important. I'm part of Jesus. Aren't you?